The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Afternoon, one and all. Welcome to another Wednesday edition of the Mark Stein Club live Q&A around the planet. And obviously you have deduced by now that Mark is not hosting today. There is an uppity Jewish mother in the hot seat right now at the mic. It's me, Laura Rosen-Cohen, and I am coming to you live from Southern Ontario in the deranged Dominion of Canada. And as I mentioned earlier in the post up at Stein Online, Mark is fine. Everything is good. He's just really, really busy with all kinds of officialdom relating to, you know, as you saw, the appointment of Mark as the Commissioner of Inquiry for making Canada the 51st state in America. Everybody here in Canada is truly, truly excited about that. And then he's got all of the pansexual pride day, week, month, year, decade events. So Mark is really busy. He sends his regards to everybody, of course. And I promised him that I would take exceptionally good care of the club and of the mic and of the seat. So I'm hoping we will have a really interesting hour. We've already got tons of questions floating in. So let's go through our basic admin. Once again, welcome. It's Wednesday, December 11th here at the Mark Stein Club, 3 o'clock Eastern time without any fancy time recitation because only Mark can do justice to time recitation. And we have lots of questions, Middle East, American politics, a couple of cultural ones. So I'm going to do my best over the next hour to get to as many questions as we can. And obviously, as usual, if there's some that we didn't get to, you can certainly feel free to shoot me an email either via the Mark Stein Club or to my own email, which is just my full name at gmail.com, and we'll try to get back to you. And as you know, anybody around the planet can listen to this fantastic Clubland live Q&A around the planet, but only members of the Mark Stein Club can drop in their questions into the comment box or via email. So if you are listening somewhere around the world and you have not yet become a member, do consider it. It's very interesting to hear from all of our readers and listeners around the world, and you can give it a trial if you like, shorter than a year membership. So it's a great way of supporting Mark and all his endeavors and all of his fights, and keeps fantastic content available to so many people around the world. So that is the Mark Stein Club. If you want more information, obviously you can get to Stein Online. So I wanted to just, you know, before we go into your questions, take a brief moment, a little bit of reflection. You know, we are getting to the holiday season, and interestingly, Christmas and Hanukkah kind of coincide this year. I'm not going to talk about Kwanzaa, not super into Kwanzaa. So we've got a couple of festivals of joy and light coinciding, which I think everybody probably agrees that we need a lot of nowadays. And I know personally, I am hoping and praying that both of those holiday seasons and the immense spiritual strength attached to both, the power of prayer and the power of light and goodness, will bring good things to our troubled world. Personally, I am also praying that with Donald Trump getting close to being in office again, that we will see some returning of the hostages from Gaza. That's a prayer. So I wanted to mention, not to be morose or gloomy or ghoulish or anything like that, but on Sunday this past weekend, I had occasion, unfortunately, to have to be at a funeral, and It was sadly a high school classmate and a friend from high school who had battled cancer for quite a long time, for just over 2 decades, a rare form of cancer. And she passed away. She had a family, kids, etc. So it's really quite awful. And you know, at the same time when the funeral was happening and I was attendant at this funeral, one of my children was in a different time zone attending a Jewish wedding, which was really festive and happy and crazy wild, great music, great food, etc. And of course, it got me thinking about the cycle of life, the circle of life, how you, one person can be at a funeral, one person can be at a bris, one person can be at a confirmation, one person can be at all these different life events and different people at different times. And that's all part of the fabric of our life. But I was certainly thinking about remarks that people made, you know, the various eulogies, and thinking we should probably be more concerned in our day-to-day life about the way we want to be remembered. Nobody stays on this earth. We have a limited time to do what our mission is on earth. We don't know when that time is going to expire, from second to second, minute to minute, and day by day. And I was really thinking a lot about, you know, what would I like people to say about me? I have no plans of going anywhere, especially like not today, because I'm sitting in the greatest seat and speaking to all the Mark Stein audience around the world. So nothing's happening today. Don't get all excited. But generally just thinking about the things that I'd like to be remembered for. And everybody has something different, obviously. But I think we really have to make an effort, even when we're bogged down in the quagmire of day-to-day living, to think about the way that we want to be remembered is the way that we should be living. So if somebody wants to be remembered, for example, as a person of kindness, then they have to be actively participating in acts of kindness during the day. Somebody of great, to be remembered, somebody as great faith, you have to be demonstrating your faith and you have to be acting on that during the day. So I hope that that's not a downer. I know that sometimes we get into really heavy stuff, and I definitely don't want to mention that how to be remembered as a downer, but I think it's something that we should be cognizant of in our day-to-day life a little bit more, because we really just get so caught up in some of the day-to-day struggles. And you know, there is an expiration date for all of us, and we only leave either our children or our good deeds, and we leave the spirit of what we've done, you know, aside from whatever religious beliefs that we have. So a little bit of food for thought for you guys. You know, feel free to chime in. And that certainly does relate to some of the questions that we have already coming in. So let us get started. We have something here. We've got a question from Commander. So thank you, Commander, for your question, which is, David Manette, I believe, opined that his mother always looked at current events as to whether it was good for the Jews or not. Do you believe the fall of Assad is good for Israel? So that's a really interesting question. And obviously Syria has been on, I think, most people's minds around the world, and particularly, you know, in Israel, it's a very big question because they are neighbors. And I think that this is really one of those cases where many things can be true at the same time. And with Syria, there are so very many things that are true at the same time. So it's true that Assad Senior and Assad Junior were absolute monsters, barbarian murderers of the first order. And nobody really said a peep, you know, when hundreds of thousands of Syrians were being murdered under that regime. And there was a certain real politics stability with the Assads, but it is a good thing that they are not murdering people and imprisoning people and gassing people. That is a good thing. Is it good for Israel? The thing that would be good for Israel is just to have no dealings with Syria, no matter who it's run by, kind of a detente. But Israel has acted preemptively in destroying the whole navy, all the boats. They've destroyed all kinds of other weaponry. And they've also taken occupied the Syrian half of Mount Hermon, which is a strategic asset up in the Golan Heights. I think it's defensive. Like, Israel doesn't have any territorial aspirations beyond having that defensive position at the height of the Golan Heights to make sure that nobody can, as has been in the past, get close enough to Israel, you know, particularly as we've seen all the Iranian proxies do, and use that as a base to launch attacks on Israel and to do tunnels and stuff like that. So I've seen Netanyahu talk about this being like an taking, not 100% taking credit, but he has discussed how the fall of, you know, Hezbollah and the collapse of Hamas, you know, these do lead back to Netanyahu and to the current Israeli government. But I don't think we can really say that it's good for Israel or good for the Jews right now. Excuse me, because whatever leadership, whatever kind of governance is going to come now, there's certainly signs that it is not good, not just not for Jews, but for Christians and all the other minorities, the Kurds, and not good for women. And I have seen more than one video where the Takbir is being chanted, and where women are Christian women are already talking online about having to be accompanied by other males when they are out and about in Syria, and lots of Allahu Akbar going on. So I think it's a very dangerous, very unstable situation. But my main answer is that many things can be true at the same time. I hope that gives you a little bit more meat on the bones. I just read something by Ellie Lake at the Free Press, which I haven't had a chance to go into fully, but there are a lot of people that I generally quite agree with who are saying that the fall of Syria and the crumbling of Iranian proxies essentially is it makes it a very bad day for Obama. And that I actually do agree with, because, you know, Obama's whole enterprise of turning allies of America into enemies and enemies into allies and cozying up to Iran, that was pure Obama, and it was very dangerous for the entire world, dangerous for America, and dangerous for the whole West. So I think we might, you know, be seeing the beginning of the end of that, especially when Trump actually takes office. Okay, let us go now to Doug Cole. Doug says, "Hi, Laura, and welcome back to my favorite substitute deputy undersecretary of guest hosting. You should be promoted to full strength official guest host status. You are that good." Thank you. That's very sweet. "Say, with the seemingly sudden collapse of the Assad regime, can you shed some light on the subject and why it's considered a disaster to Jew-hating Iran? I admit I'm not fully up to speed on that sort of thing. It just seems like everyone in the Middle East has it out for Israel, so not sure why one failed dictatorship makes it better, unless it does." So I think we touched on a little bit of that. Basically, the advantage that a country like Syria had was the proximity to Israel, you know, an actual border, and also as a highway for Iran to funnel weapons and money in order to wage jihad against Israel. So without the ability to be the import center for money and for weapons, you know, that is a blow against Iran. And I think also for Iran on the other level is that they're, when they witness how the Syrian rebels took over the place in like 11 days, you know, they must be worried about their own status. They have to be. And all it really takes, I'm not trying to minimize this, but, you know, in Iran, if the security forces, actual Iranians, not mercenaries, which there are apparently quite a number of, like Afghani, Uzbeki, you know, murderer mercenaries in the security forces in Iran, but the actual people decide that they're not going to rape, imprison, modesty police, you know, their brethren, then that's when the change takes place. So I think Iran is like primed for that kind of organic regime change. And I think Trump being in office will obviously be a massive boon to the Iranian people. So yes, everybody in the Middle East, not everybody anymore in the Middle East is out for Israel. I mean, it is quite astonishing how the Sunni states and places like Sudan and Morocco, how the Abraham Accords brought them into a peaceful fold. And there's certainly, you know, in the UAE, notwithstanding the murder of Rabbi Kagan, but there's a lot more affection for Jews and for Israeli tourists and for business dealings than there has been, you know, in the so-called peace, the extremely cold, icy, frosty, completely icy, frosty, cold peace that there has been for decades with Jordan or with Egypt. So it's not impossible. And I think also, you know, there's people don't like to talk about the theological component of it, in that these are the Sunnis who are more peaceful, not the Shia. There is an element of, you know, a strange alliance, strange bedfellows with Saudi Arabia, Sunnis as well. So there's got to be a little bit of an Islamic reckoning and an Islamic theological move towards peace. And I think the Sunnis have been able to do that a little bit better, obviously, than the Shias right now. So not everybody in the Middle East is out for Israel. And the other thing is that there are those Arabs and Muslims among the Middle East who are, and especially Iranians, who are very encouraged by Israel's strong horse actions. That is the language of respect in the Middle East. That is speaking Arabic or speaking Farsi is being strong. And that is also a language that I think Netanyahu understands and that Trump understands. So it's going to be very interesting times. And I think we all need to just buckle up and see what happens. I hope, Doug, that addresses some of what you were asking. Okay, let's go down to, we have a question from the one and only Queen of the Jungle. So Queen of the Jungle has a very Jewy question, and you've certainly come to the right place, Madame Queen of the Jungle. So Queen of the Jungle says, "Hi, Laura. So nice to hear that a real Jewess will be running the show today in the absence of our beloved Mark, since I have a very Jewy inquiry to make. Several months ago, thanks to one of those ancestry sites, I found out that the man whom I called Dad and always considered to be my father was actually not my biological relative. For many years, my mom, who had dementia, would often tell me that my dad was not my real father. In fact, even before she got full-blown dementia, she would bitterly say the same thing when she and Dad were on the outs. Ours was a pretty dysfunctional family." Look, you know, every family is dysfunctional in its own way, believe me. That is a function of being a family. Dysfunction. My mom had also told me an incredible story that I had a hard time believing, to wit, that my real father was a Jewish doctor who had been her obstetrician. Well, it's, you know, not so crazy that there's a Jewish doctor, right? Well, it turned out to be true, and I also found out that I have a half-brother with the same doctor. We discovered each other through Ancestry, and he was able to provide a lot of information about our biological Jewish father, including photos of him and our cousins. Come to find out, I have quite a Jewish history that I am so very proud of. So here are my questions. If my biological father is Jewish, what does that make me? Am I half Jewish? And what are my children and grandchildren? To what degree are we considered Jewish? Should I tell my siblings we are in our 70s and my adult children who are in their 50s? I once started to tell my brother my suspicions and I thought he would have a nervous breakdown. So dear Jewish mother and expert on all things Jewish, I'm really not expert, I would love to know your thoughts about my situation. If you have time to share them, I imagine this will be a busy show today. In any event, thanks for all you do, and I love your articles and essays." Well, this is a very kind comment. Thank you very much. So let's just do in a nutshell that, and we did discuss this, I think, a couple weeks ago when I was guest hosting, that Judaism is a matrilineal religion. So the religious component is from mother to child. There are other religions that are patrilineal. Islam is patrilineal. So if you have a Muslim father, then you're considered by Islam to be Muslim. So in Judaism, if you have a Jewish father, you are not Jewish according to Jewish law. But, you know, certainly you have Jewish blood running through your veins and are absolutely entitled to be interested and to explore and to learn about the Jewish side of your family. So your religious status has not changed at all. The fact that your dad was Jewish does not make you Jewish. So, you know, conversely, if your mom was Jewish according to Jewish law, then you would be Jewish, and you are a female, so you would pass on that matrilineal Jewish status to your children. Interestingly, you mentioned dementia. I have some personal experience, my dad is also suffering with a form of dementia. It's a very tough thing, but I did see a reel on social media not too long ago from Chabad, a Jewish organization, and it discussed a woman who had final stages, later stages of Alzheimer's, and it was only then that she revealed to her adult child, you know, about candlelighting and synagogues and stuff. And this guy, very late in life, discovered that he was halachically, like according to Jewish law, he was Jewish. So this is not uncommon. And you know, it's really nice that you discovered that you have a half sibling. So yes, you are definitely. I would invite you to explore and learn about the Jewish heritage and wherever your dad came from, and perhaps even the circumstances that led up to that not being, you know, discussed and open in your family. But your religious status has not changed. Yeah, and if you have any other questions, like I said, you can leave another comment, or you can obviously shoot me an email. Okay, let's see what else we've got in here. We have a question from Olga in Arizona. Hello, Olga. She says, "Hi, Miss Laura. Thank you for pinch hitting. I've been trying to parse out Syria and it's giving me a headache. That Al Golani bloke sounds like a nasty piece of work, but are any of other of the factions any better? I do like that the Israeli jets swooped right in and did a bit of neutralizing. I know that'll make for a little less evil in the world." So, Olga, I agree with you. This is a very, very tenuous, very difficult situation. Obviously, I think Israel is monitoring the situation very closely. And I do also agree that the preemptive strike was essential and very wise. So I think for commentary on that, like I mentioned, there was a good piece from Ellie Lake. There's another piece that I'm going to put into the links tomorrow. That's from the Powerline blog, where they talk about the whole Syria situation, the situation relate how it relates to Obama and his policies and legacies. And I agree with you. And I mentioned previously that the Al Golani guy, you know, he kind of is flip-flopping back and forth. Like there's a lot of very excitable Allahu Akbar takbir videos, and then there's also the side of it that's basically like, yes, we hate the Zionists, but we don't really want to engage, and that would be fine. Like really, that kind of very cold détente would be excellent for Israel, and from Israel's perspective, at least now to hold the heights of Mount Hermon is also a good thing. So I think it's kind of early, and you know, the experts always get it wrong. All of the experts, especially the lefty experts, were completely wrong about Syria. I think John Kirby, just like a week ago or a week and a half ago, was like, everything's really fine and stable in Syria. It's all fabulous. So they were all totally wrong. So, you know, keep that into consideration when you're reading analysis. So yeah, I think a few people's opinion that I would check out would be like Ellie Lake, would be Powerline, Caroline Glick, what's his name? Tobin. There's another piece from the JNS news service that I'm going to, Jonathan Tobin. So there's a few people that I think are very level-headed. What else? The Commentary podcast had something about Syria as well. Pretty good. So I think it's still really early in the game to to really try to figure it out. Okay. What else do we have here? Okay, this is a good one. Okay, we have something here from David Coates, who writes, "Hi, Laura, it's always great to hear your soothing voice when Mark is absent." That's so funny because, you know, Mr. C is downstairs hanging out with our son. And I think he's happy for the break from my, quote, soothing voice. I'm not sure he thinks it's soothing all the time. But anyways, what is the local Canadian man/woman on the street take on Trump's meeting with Trudeau and Trump's jabs at regarding Canada becoming the 51st state and that maybe Trudeau could be governor? How are these comments being received? So, okay, for those of you who maybe aren't on X and aren't following the story, Trudeau, like a weak little slobbering puppy dog, went down to Mar-a-Lago at the invitation of Donald Trump and like kissed the ring. And Trump has done like one of his greatest trolls like of all time, and basically was joking around that, you know, Canada would be better off being the 51st state in the union, and Trudeau could be the governor. And he's rolling with it. And it is so funny. I mean, basically, like, the Canadian media are sort of like peeing themselves. The morose sourpusses of CBC, they were asking like Chrystia Freeland, the finance minister, like, what do you really think about this? Is it true? Is that, and it is such a magnificent troll. Like, one thing about Trump is that he has like a magical ability with a tweet to have cause, you know, like an aneurysm in people, like a meltdown. Never mind all the free publicity, never mind how great it is for all the media to have a story to run with. Like, he is a master, like ninja troll. So, you know, Canadians, depends on what part of the political spectrum you're on, right? Like, people like me are laughing hysterically about it and like begging. Yes, please come and take over Canada. Yes, want, thank you, do it. You know, finito, end of story, welcome. But the, you know, morose leftist Trudeau funded media is like, nah, 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 nah. So it's hysterical. And it is really like just a great troll by Trump. Okay, what else have we got here? There's actually a lot of questions, guys, and we are actually nearing our halfway point. So let's carry on. We're going to take a more... Oh, okay. So we've got something here that is American and / Catholic Church. And again, I have to also just remind you guys that, you know, I am very pro-Abrahamic religion, like, and I... My go-to person on Catholicism in particular was always our friend Kathy Shadle, our late friend Kathy Shadle. She always was my go-to person. So, you know, I have to try to cobble together when I have questions about what's going on in the church or things that I see the Pope doing, for example. So if I say something that is not correct, you know, regarding the church, please forgive me. I am open to be corrected, because I don't have my 100% go-to person anymore, but certain things I feel, you know, that I can comment on. So we'll get to a little bit about that. So Fran Lavery has a question for us, which is, hi Laura, are you enjoying how President Trump is pulling his team together with all his serious MAGA picks for top slots to fight the elitist globalists who are trying to, quote, malform a one world government? And then Fran also adds, will Pope Francis ever get in his head that he's the head of the Catholic Church globally and to cease reaching out to the terrorists? His unveiling of baby Jesus in a swaddling of a keffiyeh is very insulting to Catholics who feel very connected to their Jewish biblical roots. One of only three Bible readings at the celebration of the holy sacrifice of the Eucharist, excuse me, is taken from the Old Testament. And doesn't he know that the baby Jesus is not supposed to be displayed until Christmas Eve? So, okay, let's take the first part of that. Yes, I am enjoying the vast majority of the appointments. Yes. I think there's a few duds there. And I think Surgeon General, I think that's a real dud. Now, I think there are going to be some appointments that are going to be, you know, not as serious, but I think overall fantastic. I saw yesterday that Harmeet Dhillon is going to be in the Trump administration. I can't remember what her official title is, but she's a rock star in my view. And I think the Pete Hegseth thing is actually, the attempts to torpedo him is petering out. So I think there's a lot of great appointments. And, you know how Mark always says that when Republicans get elected, they are in office and leftists and Democrats are in power. I think Trump is actually in power. And he has been since the election. He's showing that he's in power, not just in office. So I think that that is going to continue. As for this episode with the Pope in a wheelchair, so he looks very frail as well. So he, instead of projecting strength, is also projecting weakness. And it's not that one should hide disability, but he is projecting frailty and cowardice and being bent over to very bad and evil dark forces represented by a keffiyeh, by the obvious symbol of terrorism. So I think it's terrible. I had no idea about what you just said about the celebration of the Holy Sacrifice of the Eucharist. I can't comment on that. I can just say that this is blanket bad for Christians. It is bad for the West. And he is a left-wing kook. I actually sent that link when I saw it to a Catholic friend of mine, and she wrote back to me that he is the Antichrist. So we could probably leave it at that. It's a very, very terrible situation, and I don't understand why more Catholics are not up in arms. It's terrible. It's very disappointing, and it's just awful. So you guys who are Catholic, let me know what you think. And also, I'd be interested to hear why there aren't more, I don't know, protests. Like, where can you protest? Where can you make your voice and your opinion be heard? But this Pope is just ghastly. Okay, we are going to move along. George Pereira wrote to us, Laura, I am led to believe that from talk on the internet that Fidel Trudeau's mother, so we are referring now to Justin Trudeau, and there is a very credible allegation about his parentage. So let's just put that aside, put a pin in that, that his mother was something of a wild child in her younger days, spreading her favors far and wide. I also know that Abraham Lincoln, ha ha ha, posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, and that you can't believe everything that you read on the internet, and yet, could you speculate on the state of what President Donald Trump refers to as gay North Dakota would be like today if she had been a tad friendlier with Mick Jagger than with Fidel? So there's a few things in here. So basically, the thing is that without being a tin hat type of conspiratorial person, if you just look at a picture of Justin Trudeau, and you look at a picture of Fidel Castro, you will see a resemblance. If you look at a picture of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, you will see that he does not look very much like Justin Trudeau. Now, it is true that Margaret Trudeau, who I believe officially had a diagnosis of bipolar disease, she was well known to be fraternizing with many other people. And it is also well known that Pierre Trudeau, I believe, was bisexual. So there were a lot of issues in that family, a lot of sexual issues, mental health issues, probably substance issues as well. Now, there was a piece written on a site called Medium about 5 years ago. I stupidly did not save it, but maybe it's in the Internet Wayback Machine. And it was a very, very impressive, lengthy analysis of all the attempts to disprove that Fidel Castro was Justin Trudeau's father by taking apart all of the fake excuses in terms of timing and conception dates and birth dates and travel through the islands that the Trudeaus did. And it was extremely convincing and extremely compelling. Like I said, it was written by a female author. It was on medium.com. I, honest to God, cannot remember the name of the writer. I tried looking for it several times and I couldn't find it. But I thought it was a bit of a joke before, but since reading that article, I am absolutely convinced without a doubt that Fidel Castro is Justin Trudeau's father. So make of that what you will, and anybody that has better internet research skills than me, although I think I'm pretty clever with that, but or if you fiddle with the Wayback Machine and you want to send it to me, that would be great, because it was, to me, it was conclusive. It was a fabulous article, and I feel really stupid for not saving a copy for myself. Okie dokie, let us move along right now. Okay, so Robert Bridges had a question about Trump dubbing Trudeau as the governor of the 51st state of Canada. So I think we've already covered that. Let's see. We've got a question now. Hold on one second. I am just going to take a pause for a sip of water. It is actually really getting warm here. Just one moment. Oh, and guess what? This just in, one of our fabulous behind the soundboard researchers has just found that article from Medium. So, guys, this is exciting. I am going to post it, and I'm going to share it with you in the links. We have a great research team here at Stein HQ. It's fabulous, and now I'm really happy. Early Christmas and Hanukkah present. So excellent, excellent research. Okay, let's take a few more questions. So we've got James saying, "Hi, Laura, great to hear your voice again. What are your thoughts on Pierre Poilievre and the current iteration of the Conservative Party of Canada? I know that in the past it's not been that exciting or all that conservative, but are you feeling a corner has been turned?" So here's the thing, guys, just remember, we have our own Andrew Lawton. He won the nomination for his region to be the representative of his area to be the Conservative candidate for the upcoming federal elections. He is in Pierre Poilievre's term. So yes, we're going to root for Pierre Poilievre to rescue whatever he can of Canada. I mean, I like Maxime Bernier a lot, the People's Party of Canada, but I don't see them having the infrastructure to actually like get enough seats to make a difference. So a majority conservative government in Canada will change some things, but overall, I am not optimistic about Canada. The economics, Trudeau has basically ruined this country. It's disgusting. There's not really an area in the downtown core that I can go to where I don't see hypodermic needles, homeless people, encampments. Every single time I ride the subway, or a streetcar in this city, there is a mentally ill or homeless person, aggressive panhandlers. That never used to be a thing here. Buildings are dirty, empty buildings. There's been not a full recovery from COVID. The demographics are terrible. The influx of hundreds of thousands of basically like non-skilled burdens on our already stretched socialized medical system and social services system. So those are things that I don't think actually can be fixed. I think I told you guys earlier that there was a stat that something like 4 million temporary residents from, you know, bleep hole countries are here in Canada and they don't want to leave. And there's no mechanism in place to actually make them leave or help them leave or even encourage them to leave. That's basically 10% of Canada's population. So Canada is really screwed. So yes, it will be a good thing. Yes, there's momentum to get rid of Trudeau. Poilievre has also been excellent in getting exposure, you know, in the international press. But will that actually make a huge difference? Will it return Canada to some semblance of normalcy? It's going to just do a little, because the damage that Justin Castro has done to this country is actually irreparable. So make of my comments what you will. Okay, let's see what we've got here now. Here is one. We're going to go back to the Middle East for a bit. We have something from Frank Gallenstein or Gallenstein. Hi, Laura. Your comments about the commissioner appointment of Mark by Trump were hilarious. I don't often laugh out loud, but I sure did after reading that. I am Frank. That is just great. Like, I am so happy that you laughed out loud, because I'll be honest, sometimes even my kids, you know, accuse me of being no filter, and I always have to sort of check myself to make sure that I haven't gone a little bit too far. But to be honest, I did think it was funny also. So I'm really glad that you got a good hearty belly laugh out of that. And there is a real joy. It's actually, I think, like holy and spiritual, making people laugh. It is a joy. It's a real human pleasure to make people laugh. And if you want a really good laugh, there's a stand-up comedian that I really love. His name is Modi, M M like mother, Modi. His last name is very Jewish. I think it's either Rosenstein or Rosenfeld. And he is just so funny. And he talks about laughter and making people laugh as having Moshiach, which is Messiah in Hebrew. Making people laugh has Moshiach energy, messianic energy. And he's all about bringing, you know, messianic good energy to the world. So anyways, a little bit of a sidetrack, but I'm really actually quite delighted that you got a good laugh out of that. And then Frank carries on and says, I'd be interested in your thoughts on Netanyahu's comments about President Obama that were revealed because of his testimony. It appears to be just another confirmation that the former president always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, as Rush used to say. So, I guess overall there is a real science to leaking information, to sharing information. There's an art to know what the ripple effect will be of the information that's being released. And it is also interesting to note which politicians weaponize their leaks and in which direction their weapons are aimed. So there is no doubt that the Biden administration and the Obama administration did this constantly to Netanyahu, constantly humiliating him on the world stage. I think you guys remember how I think they made Netanyahu go through the kitchen of the White House to get to somewhere, and Obama just hated Netanyahu. That carried on in the Biden administration for the most part. They leaked really gross, blue word comments about Netanyahu. So I think Netanyahu, it's like revenge of the nerds. Like Netanyahu's kind of like giving them back a little taste of their own medicine. As for what it reveals, I mean, it's not a surprise, right? Like Obama is an egotistical, anti-Western schmuck, you know, a dangerous, ideological, horrible, self-centered prick, you know, who cozied up to the anti-American, anti-Western Iranian regime, caused a tremendous amount of damage and loss of life, and he's a pompous prick. So this is not a surprise, and I say good on Netanyahu for revealing that and for giving people an opportunity to make up their own minds. And yeah, he definitely thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. But I do think that the Obama balloon has been pricked a little bit recently. There's a lot of talk, and I've referenced a couple of pieces that I'm going to put in the links next week that you guys should check out. Ellie Lake and Jonathan Tobin's piece. Mark also wrote a good piece, excellent essay at the beginning of the week about Syria as well. And so there does seem to be sort of a consensus. I just got a note that somebody needs me to speak a little bit louder. So sorry about that, guys. I will speak louder into the mic. I think that there's a general consensus about Obama for the most part. I think a lot of people around the world and a lot of countries that are civilized are very happy that he's no longer in power. And hopefully, as Iran has been weakened and all their proxies have been weakened, so will the Obama effect and influence be weakened. I think that probably takes care of it. And like I said, I think the jury's still out on Syria. I mean, this is all happening very quickly and in front of our eyes. So we're going to have to be smarter about this. at least we're going to have to hold on being smart on this for a few days or a couple of weeks and see how this all unfolds. Let's see what else we've got here. I guess maybe we can go back to, should we go back to America? Should we do some more Middle East? I'm just looking through and seeing what we've got here, and we do have about 15 more minutes or so. Elisa Angel writes, Who is your person of the year for 2024, Laura? You can list your top contenders for the title too, if you'd like. That's a great question. So I did just see that I saw the shortlist. I can't remember everybody who was on the shortlist. For me, it was like a toss-up between Elon Musk and President Trump. And I wrote in Newsweek last year that I thought the person of the year should be Elon Musk. And the reason that I would, even though I obviously think Trump is very deserving of that, I sort of feel on some level that Elon Musk and the purchase of X was instrumental in enabling President Trump to be victorious. So if it, I'm really tied. Like, it should be Elon and Trump probably. But obviously Trump is the president of America, so more deserving to him. But there's definitely other contenders. And I saw that Netanyahu was like on the list, I think, as well, the short list. And there's elements of Netanyahu's performance recently that I think would merit a mention. But, you know, I'm still very troubled by the lack of thorough investigation about the lead up to October 7th. And so I can't wholeheartedly say that it would be Netanyahu for me, but it's a really good question. I'm going to give it a little bit more thought and maybe circle back to that. Let's see what we've got here. We've got Manny who writes, "Dear Laura, wait, we don't want all of you. Just Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and the Northwest Territories. The rest can go with both coasts." Manny, you're gonna desert me here in Ontario? What the heck? You know, you gotta take all of us. You gotta take all of us. We really need some help over here. But that's funny. You know, you're if you take all those middle provinces, you're gonna get the crappiest weather. So lots of snow. Hope you're ready for that too. If you liberate us. Okay, moving right along. La la la. Okay, we have Charles Pertz, who says, "Mrs. Cohen." That's so funny. Sometimes my husband will call me that, just to annoy me. And it does obviously remind me much more of my being my mother-in-law. So yes, I am Mrs. Cohen, but do call me Laura. So Laura, "I always enjoy your input and you are so open that you seem like family or a longtime friend. Is this your natural state or a learned habit?" Or perhaps recreational substances, who knows? Also, "Have you learned anything more about Mexico's new leader?" So thank you for your comment that you enjoy my input. That is great. I am so open. Not sure if I'm so open. I'm glad that you feel like I am like family or a friend. I do feel relatively comfortable in this forum. I also know that I'm talking to an audience of mostly friendlies. So that helps. And any friend of Mark is a friend of mine. So that's good. As for natural state or learned habit. So learned habit, I am a habitual, regular, very verbose person, whether it's being chatty or output in terms of communication products, articles, and that sort of thing. So I've always been very verbose and active and a big reader, which I think also contributes to that. And have I learned anything more about Mexico's new leader? I haven't really put the time into studying it. I was a bit irked where she kind of backed off of the cooperation that I thought she initially signaled to President Trump. I thought that was really stupid and a bad political move. So the only more things that I learned about her is that she seems sort of like an unsophisticated Jewish sort of kook. I haven't gotten much beyond that. Like I said, because I was kind of irked and it definitely was not at the top of my priority list to be to be looking into Mexico unless they make some grand policy plan about cooperating with the incoming Trump administration. Like I said, to me, that's going to be the real litmus test of the administration in some ways. What's going to happen? What are the plans for deportations and is the military going to be used and what resources are going to go into that enterprise. So have not really done a lot more homework on the Mexican lady. Okay, let's see what else we've got here. Oh, we've got a Trudeau question, we've got a cultural question. So let's see what we've got here. Okay, Sarge has written, "Hi Laura, to jump into the cultural realm, I'm curious how you've navigated the left-wing takeover of pop culture. Do you seek out the small number of conservative-ish TV shows and movies, abstain entirely, or separate your political identity and just put up with the woke stuff if the plot is decent enough? I've always tried to do the third one, but it's been increasingly difficult given how in your face the ridiculous moralizing has gotten in various Hollywood exports." Before there was such proliferation of stuff online to read, to watch, and it was just TV shows. There were some TV shows that I really liked, like a long time ago. Then, for a long period of time, I didn't have the attention span, to watch TV. I didn't have a lot of time, but also I had kind of like this weird, not official, kind of like adult ADHD. Like I just couldn't focus, and I felt like it was very boring. Couldn't watch movies entirely. But recently, instead of like People magazine, which I used to read when I was in my 20s for the mental candy, my husband and I will like look at some Israeli shows, some documentaries, and I see the TV time as being escapism time. So just like on the weekend, if I have a pile of books, it's going to be a combination of like history books and biographies with some really completely like corny, crappy chick lit, and even romances and historical fiction as well, because I feel like you need a little bit of a balance. You can't be political all the time. Like Mark is always encouraging people to have habits that are outside of politics, because otherwise you can be very boring and it can consume your life. So I definitely try to separate it, but something gets on my nerves because it's so left wing and kooky and woke that I'm just gonna shut it off. My brain will not really compute. And I will shut that stuff off. And one thing that I will say also, just recently in fiction that I've noticed, just give me a sec, I gotta take a little sip of water. There's this thing in fiction now. I don't know if anybody else out there has noticed it, but they make the most ridiculous, insulting, and stupid, idiotic character proclamations. And it is so token and so obvious and such pandering. It literally drives me crazy. So there'll be a book, for example, and it's fiction, and then there'll be a statement like, "Jessica's brother had a very hard time. He was a non-cisgendered, one-legged drag star in the black community, capital B, who spent his early years as a drag show agent in the BIPOC community of Syrian refugees, and just this, do you get what I'm saying? This ridiculous inserting of nobody asked, nobody cares. Like, I don't need to know this ridiculous, stupid propaganda thing about your character. Like, you've basically killed the character, you've killed the story, you're boring. You're a dum dum, and if I see that, I shut the book and it goes right back to the library, and it's so annoying. So that is happening so much in fiction, lately, and I can't stand it. So that is the one thing. I will shut it off if it's too much, and I will shut the book. I'll give the book back. Will not read it, if it goes overboard. But other than that, sometimes you just need stuff that really is just mind candy, but like only to a certain point. I hope that answers your question. That's just my personal view of things. Okay, what else we got here? PK says to us, "Did you see the news that Justin Trudeau has now made, quote, Hanukkah bushes tax exempt? Some dumb staffer evidently didn't even realize it was a joke." Yeah, for those of you who are not in Canada, Justin Trudeau and his administration made these ridiculous, like, pretend tax cuts, excuse me, and tax exempt proclamations. And one of them was an exemption for Hanukkah bushes. Now, there really is no such thing as a Hanukkah bush. It's like this, it's a takeoff, obviously, on a Christmas tree for those people who have Christmas envy. Note, that nobody, Jewish people don't really have Hanukkah bushes ever. But I will admit that I did have Christmas tree envy. And I think I've mentioned this before, my dad growing up actually wouldn't let me go to our neighbors to trim the tree. I did not grow up Orthodox, but even my dad, who came from a very, like my one of my boobies was like a communist almost. They came from, they had socialist influence in my dad's side of the family. And even they would not let me go across the street and trim the tree because they felt that I would be sort of sucked into all of Christmas. Now, that is probably true. However, I still am a massive fan of Christmas cookies. They are beautiful and festive and lovely. I am a major fan of Christmas music. Love it. As you know, the Jews control the entire world, the Zionist occupational government. And part of that, the roots of that are in Christmas music. You know, all the best Christmas stuff comes from Jewish people. So I like the tinsel. I like the cards. I like everything about it. I'm all about ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. But we do not have a Hanukkah bush. We have a lovely Hanukkah, a lovely menorah for candle lighting. And I usually post a picture of that when Hanukkah comes around with my column and a picture of the latkes. And those are very good. So yeah, that's no Hanukkah bush. It's very silly. Trudeau is just ridiculous, terrible, terrible guy. Okay. Suzanne Rennie writes to us, Laura, which recreational substances were you referring to exactly? Just kidding. Thank you for filling in today. It's always a pleasure to hear your thoughts. Best wishes to you and yours for happy Hanukkah and for 2025. Same to the outstanding crew and our fellow Markstein Club members. Merry Christmas too. Suzanne, yeah, it's just, I was just joking. I am actually like a real square, very, very square. I don't even, my husband kind of gets frustrated sometimes. Like, I don't even like alcohol that much. Like, occasionally we will share a beer. My dad growing up was very, very against alcohol, never drank ever. My mom liked wine. And I think I just kind of picked that up. I feel like something my mom always said to me was like, she never took drugs because she knew that her brain was like the only thing that she had to keep control. And you don't want to damage that. And I really do feel that way. I was always the designated driver. But like I said, I do like the couple things that I do like that my husband and I will have, like a beer with the glasses popped in the freezer before. I like that with a barbecue. And I do actually enjoy dry kosher red wine. We can talk about what kosher wine is, but yeah, you know, observant Jews can only drink kosher wines. Beer is a different category. So I do end up enjoy dry red, just glass, you know, once in a while. Other than that, I am super not into other substances. I'm very boring and square. Okay. Let's see. We've got one more comment. I think we have time for like one or two more, and then we will start to wrap things up. So actually, we're going back to Alyssa Angel. She has another comment, so we're going to take that too. And she says, other person of the year suggestions, Mark Stein, goes without saying, for free speech advocacy and because he's our pal. Definitely agree with that. Joe Rogan, that's actually, yes, I agree. Very influential. Very important on the free speech front as well. Very influential. That is a good candidate. Georgia Maloney and her silent film era worthy facial expressions. Yeah, you know, she definitely was giving Elon Musk the googly eyes, right? You've already said Donald Trump and Elon Musk, so I'm with Trump as the winner. Yeah, you know, really, it's like a... Obviously it's Trump, but I guess I just feel like I was trying to articulate before that the Trump return was predicated by Elon Musk and the purchase of Twitter, now known as X. I hope that makes sense. And I am just like really delighted that Trump will be back in the White House. I mean, I posted, you guys saw, but you know, joking around that Mark was going to pansexual pride festivities. But, you know, part of the beauty of Trump getting back into the White House, obviously, is that that is going to be hopefully a thing of the past. And that's just one more thing to look forward to, an end to not all, but like a good part of the wokery. I think that the reason why people are feeling a little bit optimistic, especially in America, is because we're seeing the signs of that, a little bit less crazy, a little bit more normal. And I think we all can take a moment to appreciate that. That is part of the Trump victory, MAGA, whatever you want to call it, but it's just a return to common sense, you know, an ability to function in society, not feeling like everything that you say puts you at risk, walking on eggshells. There's a lot of stuff that I think we can look forward to. Excuse me. And the jury's still out on the Middle East. I hope and pray we may be getting close to some kind of agreements with the negotiations going on for the return of the hostages. We're just going to have to keep our eyes on a lot of these stories and understand that expert predictions and prognostications can be very, very silly, and nobody's an expert. A lot of people are just guessing. So guys, we are coming to the end of our show. I think we really covered a lot of ground here, actually. And as I mentioned, a repeat just on a short plug for the Mark Stein Club. I know that we have people listening from all over the world, and the questions have come in likewise from all over the world. And do remember that while you can listen, you know, from everywhere around the planet, it really is a membership to the Mark Stein Club that will enable you to drop your questions in and get a lot of value, meet other people, club members from around the world. And if you would like to find out more about that and also about the Mark Stein Cruise, which is going to be setting sail in April, I believe is the dates. The dates are April 6th to 13th. In Europe, highly recommend it. Check that out at Mark Stein's website at steinonline.com. So that is it for me, guys. It has been an honor and a pleasure being with you guys once again, and I hope you have a great evening, and any follow-up questions can be sent to the club or to me personally. And we are going to close it out now and wish you guys a very good evening, and I will be back with you tomorrow with a new edition of Laura's Links. That's it for now. Take care, guys.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.